Good afternoon and welcome to Soundbites, Release 1.1 for September 10th, 1989. I'm Bob Smith, and coming up this hour, you're going to be meeting in our opening segment David Bunnell, the founder of many of the computing publications that we depend on, now doing some exciting new things to foster computer education. Parents, teachers, and students, this segment will be for you. And in the second segment, Ben Wright, a Dallas attorney who's writing pioneering work on what you can and can't legally do with your PC and whether some of the business you transact electronically has the same force of law. If you do business by computer at all, you'll definitely need this segment. Both of our guests will be taking your computing questions at 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994, so be ready for your calls. But first, coming up, the computer news of the week. It looks like the personal computer could become a key to lowering the high dropout rate in inner-city schools. The Worthland Group has released new findings from its latest survey of teachers nationwide and found that 2 out of 3 say computers in the classroom have an effect on students at risk of dropping out before they graduate. The teachers say the computers grab the interest of the high-risk students when normal teaching methods do not. The survey was commissioned by a grant from computer giant IBM. Meanwhile, new efforts are underway to increase the exposure of high-risk inner-city students to the computer world. Minutes from now, we'll be meeting David Bunnell, the founding publisher of PC Magazine, PC World, and Mac World, whose new Computers and You program hopes to break down the barriers dividing inner-city youths and computer literacy. When we spoke to Bunnell this week to learn about the program, we found out that one of its most important benefits, especially from the student's point of view, they relate less to the nuts and bolts of computing than to an overall attitude toward life and education.
Our experience at Computers and You is that students have an opportunity to build their self-esteem. So students that are having difficulty in the classroom, sometimes for the very first time in their life, experience success with the personal computer. They learn that they can learn things they can achieve, and it's very motivating for them. And the other factor I would say is that personal computers are not judgmental. They're giving you positive reinforcement when you do something right, but they're not criticizing you and they're not standing over you. They're working with you, and kids are very attracted to computers.
We'll be learning more about this unique program just minutes from now when we join David Bunnell on the live line from California. Here comes Apple's answer to the new portable IBM PC System 2 machine. Industry analysts say there is both good news and bad news in the new portable Macintosh. Good news is analysts predict it will have the largest and sharpest flat flip-up screen with a full 1 million picture elements. That's especially important to those planning to use the machine for design work. The screen will also have a separate transistor for each picture element, meaning users will not have to put up with the slow response of most flat screens. The bad news is the portable Mac will be only 4 pounds lighter than the 21-pound IBM portable, meaning it won't be a true laptop. It'll be priced at about $6,000, also well above the level of existing Macintosh-compatible laptops. It will have a rechargeable lead-acid battery for use when normal AC current is not available. So far, no comment from Apple itself, as is their custom. The company's waiting until the official introduction date on the 20th, a week from Wednesday, to expose the full details. Wang Laboratories is introducing 4 new PCs it hopes will help it on the way back to profitability. The new line of 4 personal computers is compatible with IBM's AT architecture and with microchannel architecture as well. Prices will start at $2,100 for a model without hard disk drive or monitor. How far is artificial intelligence development and application progressing? Reports from Texas indicate some support systems are now beginning to give computers reasoning power to help executives make business decisions. Executcom Systems says its software will give decision-makers access to company information and statistics in summary form. Then, it will interpret data and answer hypothetical questions about what would happen if any one of a number of courses of action is taken. Software developers say under their program, the computer will even offer an opinion at what it thinks is the best choice. Imagine a computer memory breakthrough that will allow you to store thousands of times more data and retrieve it in a tiny fraction of the time needed today. Well, a consortium of American research companies says it is close to doing just that with three-dimensional memory storage. Researchers from Microelectronics and Computer Technology Corporation say vast increases in memory density are being achieved experimentally by optically storing data in three dimensions, rather than just on the surface as with current memory systems. Holographic laser techniques store the data, then locate and retrieve it within milliseconds. The initial devices are expected to appear in a few years in military and scientific applications. They'll store several hundred megabytes in a piece of material about 3/16 of an inch thick and 1.5 inches wide. Later on, high-end personal computers and even home entertainment systems might use such devices perhaps within a decade. An inch-square chip, it is said, according to the developers, might be able to store an entire full-length movie or television program, and eventually, it is hoped by the developers that the data could be dense enough so that multiple programs could be stored. And that's this week's Computer News. You're listening to Sound Bites on WXXI 1370. I'm Bob Smith. David Bunnell is the man who launched some of the most important publications in the computing field, publications such as PC World and Mac World. While he still contributes to his magazines and sits on the board of his parent company, PCW Communications, he's spending most of his time these days on two new endeavors. One, of course, is IO Publishing Company, setting up specialized online information services for very specialized professional fields, such as a database for biotechnology industries. And second, the main topic of our conversation today, a new computer literacy program called Computers and You, targeted at disadvantaged youngsters, aimed at giving children and young adults in the inner city the skills that they're going to need to make it in the highly computerized workplace of the future. David, it's good to have you with us online today.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Let me ask you, first of all, implicitly I get the feeling that in your program, schools themselves, the public school systems, not doing too much to foster computer literacy, are they?
Well, particularly inner city and urban schools. I've read some studies that indicate that students in middle class and upper middle class neighborhood have much more access to personal computers in the schools than they do in the inner city schools.
Now, of course, even then, that's not all that much either when we read, for example, the surveys that we alluded to at the top of the program.
Yeah, that's true. I think that we haven't yet realized the vision that there should be one computer for every student. We're not even close to that yet.
Now, that would be certainly an exciting prospect, and we can talk as we will about the general potentials of computers in education. And incidentally, if you're interested in that topic, if you are perhaps a concerned parent or student or a teacher, we'd like to invite you to join us at 263-WXXI, 263-9994, to voice your views as we talk about computers and education and the special things that David Bunnell is doing in the San Francisco Bay Area. Now, even though we don't see too much happening in the public schools, there's still a lot happening in the homes if you're among the more fortunate, right?
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of kids do have computers at home, and they use them not only for games, but a lot of learning applications.
Now, of course, that means that the richer you are, the more likely you are to acquire computer literacy early, which means some of the people who are in the inner cities are really at a disadvantage, aren't they?
That's very true, and that was really the notion that sparked the idea of Computers and You. I was in a debate, believe it or not, with Jean-Louis Gasset of Apple, and the topic of the debate was, are personal computers making society more democratic? And I was asked to take the position that they are not making society more democratic. And during the course of doing research, I discovered that actually, because personal computers are available to people in our society that are already in the middle class or upper middle class and not available to the rest of the people, that the computer, in a way, is contributing to widening the gap between the haves and the have-nots. So the people that really need personal computers the most and need special education are the ones that really aren't having access to them.
That's going to stir up some controversy in and of itself, because I know one of the selling points behind the computer revolution was that it would give more access to information to everybody.
Yeah, that is one of the visions of the personal computer, but unfortunately there's a price tag attached to it, and not everyone can afford it.
263-WXXI, as I mentioned a moment ago, your chance to get online with David Bunnell. Let's go to the phones right now. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I've got a question for both you and the man on the phone there. I was wondering, it seems like some of the programs available now for educational use are headed more towards teaching kids to use them as tools rather than in the beginning it seemed like they kept trying to teach kids how to program, and it seems like that's kind of backward. The PC, from my point of view, should be initially and probably completely used as a tool, and you should learn how to use it as a tool, not how to program.
Yeah, I totally agree with that viewpoint, and we do use personal computers at our learning center to teach literacy,
and particularly the software for kids. There's lots of programs to teach you how to read better, how to spell better, how to programs for art and programs for music. And after all, in the business world, the computer is a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And practically any profession you're in, you use the computer these days as part of doing your job. And so it seems that it should be the same thing in schools and with kids.
Yeah, I agree. You think that's where it's headed?
Oh, absolutely. I really do. And I think that maybe the personal computer got off on the wrong foot in schools initially because it was used pretty much for teaching basic language programming or Logo or Pascal. And really, these things are kind of interesting, but they're not germane to the main function of teaching people how to be more literate.
Right. Where do you think higher education computers are headed, like Next and things like that?
Well, I think they have a tremendous possibility because you have the creation of interactive textbooks. You know that a lot of textbooks have exercises, and imagine if those textbooks were computerized. When you answer a problem at the end of a physics textbook, you would immediately know if that answer is correct, and then the textbook could be intelligent and steer you towards exercises that would reinforce areas that you need practice in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the idea of powerful workstations, scholars' workstations in upper university, graduate school, and in, particularly in science and math courses, be very powerful.
Do you think software is ever going to catch up with the hardware technology? It seems like hardware keeps dragging software along, but I mean, we're still fiddling around trying to get a decent user interface in DOS.
Well, that's true. Hardware always is more advanced than software, but it is amazing if you look at where we've come in the last 10 years. We're sort of, I guess we have short attention span, so we want everything to happen right now, but a lot has really happened, and a lot more will happen over the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. 263-WXXI, incidentally, is the number to join in to get online with David Bunnell here on Soundbites. I'm Bob Smith, and let me ask you right now,
okay,
the way this program began, it must have been tough just to get it up off the ground and to get the equipment, the software, and the teachers together. How did you do it?
Well, I wrote a column in PC World and Mac World magazines, and I got a tremendous response to that. And then I asked some of my friends in the personal computer business, people who run software and hardware companies, to serve on an advisory board. And actually, I discovered that people in the computer business are very generous, and once they were presented with the notion of this program, they could relate to it very quickly, and we got a lot of hardware and software donations. I'll tell you the thing that's hardest to come by is the money. People, it's easier to give away hardware and software, but we also need funding for the staff. We have a full-time staff of 4 people at the computer center, and raising the money to keep paying payrolls and pay for electricity and phone bills is actually harder than getting the hardware and software.
You've got some people there on staff, your professional corporate staff, who could probably make tons more money in private industry, couldn't they?
Oh, yeah. But they're very dedicated, and this is such a unique opportunity to make a difference. There are people in this world, thank God, who really want to help make a difference in other people's lives, and it's an ideal platform for that. The computer center is located in the Tenderloin district of San Francisco, which is one of the more economically deprived areas. It's at Lye Church, and it's this church where they feed a lot of people. They have programs for dealing with addiction and dealing with family problems and housing problems, and the computing learning center kind of is integrated in all those other programs. So it's a tremendous opportunity to help break the cycle of poverty for a number of individuals, and that's what we're attempting to do.
This could serve, what I'm about to ask you, as sort of a paradigm for taking any kid who's computer illiterate and taking him forward and making him feel comfortable with the hardware and the software.
Yeah.
When you bring a child into the program at presumably junior high or early high school age, how do you get them started, and how does the program go along?
Well, we generally have a class called Introduction to Personal Computers, and that class introduces you to the notion of computers and how you use them. Then we very quickly, though, move kids over to specific applications. We find that Deluxe Paint is one program that a lot of kids can immediately learn and start using. And there are a number of programs on the Apple IIgs. We have about 20 Apple IIgs systems. And, we find that it's very easy to find programs to get kids involved, and then we keep them involved. We run a very individualized instruction program for children. We also have an adult program. So we have about 150 children, about 150 adults. And then in the adult program, we do word processing, spreadsheets, and databases, and mostly classes that help people get jobs. But in the children's program, we have found, amazingly, that our kids just get so attached to the computer so quickly, we have virtually a zero dropout rate in the children's program. Where in the adult program, we have about a 40% dropout rate. People lose interest or they are intimidated by the computer. But somehow, that interactive screen is so compelling to children. They just love it and they immediately kind of glom onto it. And then they're up there. When you would be amazed. The children's program, after-school program, starts at 4 o'clock. And at exactly 4 o'clock, there are about 50 kids just waiting to rush into the doorway, you know, and you can't hardly get rid of them to close down at night. They're that attracted to it.
It has a tendency to be addictive, I guess, to anybody who gets into it. One thing I wonder, relative to that,
yeah,
how many do you have to turn away?
We have waiting lists for all of our classes, and we could easily be serving about 1,000 students instead of 300, so we're looking to expand and grow our program. We have about 50 personal computers right now. And believe it or not, we have 200 volunteers in this program. And these are people in the computer business largely, and some of them are teachers, though, who volunteer to teach classes, they volunteer to maintain equipment, they volunteer to help us organize our program. And it's really incredible.
That's certainly heartening. One thing I want to ask you, too, about this whole program, and that ranges to the effects of it outside just the computer classroom itself. Do you think you're having a potential effect on lowering the overall dropout rate and keeping these kids involved in the education process?
Well, we sure hope so. Our program opened in January, and we're just starting to institute methods of measuring the success that we're having, and we're starting to work with schools in the neighborhood. And one of the things that we're interested in is finding out if students at the computer center start to perform better at school. So we'll be tracking their grades, and we'll be talking to their teachers and finding out if we're having that kind of impact. And we think we are, just from the individual feedback we get from students, but that is one of our goals.
Communities that have big dropout rates, and a lot of major eastern cities, including our own, do, will probably be watching very closely what you're doing.
Yeah, I hope so.
One thing also that they'll be watching very closely, of course, is how you teach and your methods of teaching and also your machinery. I want to get to that as soon as I remind everybody you're listening to Soundbites here on WXXI 1370. And your chance to interface with us is as close as your telephone at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We invite you to join in. I'm Bob Smith, and with me on Liveline, David Bunnell. He, of course, the founder and publisher of many of the most important computer journals out today. He is also the founder and publisher of new ventures, including IO Publishing, which is setting up specialized online information services. And, perhaps most importantly of all, he is the founder of the Computers and You program, which is bringing inner-city children in the San Francisco area closer to computers and maybe a prototype for a nationwide system of computer education for young people. And I want to get into an area right now,
okay,
which is general in terms of computer education, your methodology of actually teaching them and the kind of machinery that you're using. We were talking last week on this, and there's a debate going on as to what kind of machines are best, what kind of systems of software are the best, how you ought to be teaching them. Some people say that it's best to start them out on PC compatibles, IBMs or IBM clones, because that's what they're going to see. Some people say we ought to bring them in with Macs. Some people say the Apple IIs. Why did you pick your particular group of equipment to work with?
Well, actually, we have PCs and we have Macintoshes and we have Apple II. So
take your choice.
The way we look at it is that those are the three main systems. The Apple II is really a wonderful system because it has such a wealth of software. And really, it's the software that should drive what kind of hardware you need. If you're doing desktop publishing, though, we find that the Macintosh is the best tool. And we do produce a monthly newsletter that the students put out themselves, and we use the Macintosh for that. And then we use the PC for more business-oriented classes because, as you say, you know, the PC is pretty ubiquitous in the business world. So for spreadsheets and database and word processing, we do a lot of that on the PC.
That sounds like sort of a microcosm of a debate that's going on with the computer-using community among all of them as to which system to use.
Well, I think you should use all of them. I think that you should have a familiarity with computers and software so that you can actually move from one machine to another because, you know, who knows, 5 or 10 years from now, we may all be using workstations and maybe they'll all be Unix-based systems with new kinds of interfaces that we haven't seen yet and we'll be doing new kinds of applications. It keeps changing a lot. I mean, I started out on a CPM machine, and I'm sure many people in the audience remember Osborne computers and I'm probably a lot of people in your audience started out using WordStar, and now they've moved on to WordPerfect or Microsoft Word or something like that.
Of course, they will remember Osborne because Adam Osborne was on the program last week with some rather controversial comments, I might say, but one thing, that following up on that, if we're headed toward maybe one standard, how are you going to adapt? Looks like we're having a little bit of technical difficulty. David, are you there? Can you hear us? I wonder if we've lost. It looks like we're disconnected, but we'll try to reestablish connection right away with David Bunnell, and we invite you to make your calls at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Telephone glitches, of course, in long-distance systems do happen from time to time, and, of course, we're experiencing one right now as we continue to work on reestablishing that connection right out to the West Coast. But who knows? Inanimate objects do sometimes behave strangely, but we're finding that out right now. While we're waiting, we do want to remind you that you have a chance to call in and make your online contact. That chance is close as your telephone at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And, of course, the lines are open right now, so we invite you to join in as we're talking about computers and education with a man who is doing a lot precisely in that field, David Bunnell, who will be back with us online in just a moment. We're going to be getting into the discussion not only of what he is doing specifically for those in the inner city areas, but what we can do generally for all children to make sure that all kids come out of high school computer literate, because that, after all, is going to be the ultimate goal that we'll have for our society in the months and years ahead. We should be establishing contact with David Bunnell just momentarily, and I understand we have indeed done so. David, thanks for being back with us.
I guess we got cut off. That happens on phone interviews sometimes.
Well, unfortunately, until they update everything completely and I guess make it state-of-the-art, we're going to be experiencing that from time to time.
We'll have to wait for fiber optics.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we're not at that stage, unfortunately, quite yet. But I guess I wanted to get back to something that we had promised to talk about with our listeners just a moment ago while we were disconnected, and that is how to structure a program, and presumably that's the ultimate goal, to make sure that all high school kids come out of high school computer literate. That's the goal, isn't it?
Well, I think literate is the goal. And I think, actually, the way I look at a little broader definition is I want to make sure that all students are literate. And part of being literate in today's world is having computer skills. It's a subset of a much bigger topic.
And if we all need that as part of a whole range of other skills, are we going about it the right way, even those schools that do teach it? Are we going about it the right way or wrong way?
Well, I think that one of the biggest problems that schools have is that a lot of the teachers don't have the training on computers themselves. And I think that you have to start with the teachers. And I think every teacher should have a personal computer. They should use it for keeping track of their grades and doing reports and make it part of the teacher's daily life, and then it will be a lot easier to integrate it into the classroom. Because unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, young people learn computers a lot faster and they're more readily adapt to them. And my perception is in a lot of classrooms, the kids are way ahead of the teachers in terms of computer skills.
You know, something the teachers surveyed by the Workman Group confirmed that most of them say that's precisely what the situation is. They're afraid of computers, the kids aren't.
Yeah.
They don't feel they can teach it.
Yeah, so I think that the schools should focus a lot of energy on teaching computer skills to teachers so that, you know, the teachers feel comfortable with it, and then it'll be easier to compel people to the vision that computers are very important for learning.
I wonder what scared teachers, and really what scares most adults off when dealing with computers, and why they don't have the same facility for learning that younger children do.
Well, it's like a foreign language. They say kids can learn foreign languages faster than adults. I think, though, a lot of it has to do with the kids today grow up in a video culture. Everything relates around the video screen. You have television and you have video games. And the computer is part of that video culture. And I think that because of that, children are more comfortable and familiar with working from a screen.
Now, you're, of course, succeeding in bringing children and computers much closer together. What's going to be done in the long run? You're finding a lot bigger dropout rate when you try to work with adults. What do you have to do in the long run to make adults feel more comfortable with the computers that we're all going to have to use in our working environment?
Well, my feeling is that while it is more difficult to teach adults, the thing that's important is to focus on the success stories. And at the Computer Use Center, we have a number of adults who have gone through our program and are now working and are working using their computer skills. They're working in jobs that require word processing or spreadsheets or databases. And I think that you can't win all the battles, but it's important to win the ones that you can win, that some people just are more motivated and they're willing to work hard, and you give them the opportunity and they will run with it. And some people won't, but they're... If I say there's a 40% dropout, that means there's a 60% success rate of people who stick with the program and graduate classes. So I'm just happy whenever I find that we've helped one person break out of the poverty cycle.
David, I want to thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us, and thanks for being on Soundbites.
You're welcome.
My thanks to David Bunnell on the live line with us from California. And coming up just a few seconds from now, we look at the law and how it affects you if you do business by electronic data interchange. Attorney Ben Wright will be joining us on the live line from Dallas, Texas, to tell you what you're going to need to know. I'm Bob Smith, and you are listening to Soundbites here on WXXI 1370. 263 WXXI is our number. Be sure to call.